Okay, we're going to call the Education Committee meeting to order. Today's date is April 9th. Time is a little bit after 8. In attendance today, we have Co-Chairman Thomas, Vice Chairman Davis, Senator Huggins, Senator Olson, and myself, Co-Chairman Meyer. So we do have a quorum to conduct business. I appreciate everybody being here today. On today's agenda, the committee will be hearing Senate Bill 313, an act relating to the Alaska Youth Academy. I'm going to ask Co-Committee Aide Jomo Stewart to come forward, introduce the bill, and then we'll be hearing from various representatives from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs pertaining to the Youth Academy. Also, we have representatives here from the Department of Education. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee before we get started, Mr. Stewart, floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jomo Stewart, Co-Committee Aide for the Senate Education Committee. Senate Bill 313 effectively changes the way the Alaska Challenge Youth Academy is funded. The Alaska Challenge Youth Academy is a residential high school for students who have left school prior to graduating. The academy is very successful, has a graduation rate of 70%. Currently, the Youth Academy receives funding based on a formula, which is 7 times the base student allocation per residential student, plus 60% of the base student allocation for non-residential students, minus federal matching funds. Under SB 13, the Youth Academy would receive a flat allocation of $11,990 per enrolled student, both residential and non-residential. So this effectively locks in the Youth Academy's funding at current levels. And federal funds are held harmless. I do have, I believe that the general, as well as representatives of the academy, are here to speak to more of the specifics of the bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stewart. Is there any questions, Mr. Stewart, before we go on to our next presenters? Okay, seeing none. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. There's a note in the sponsor statement says, however, as the BSA has grown over the years to cover retirement costs and other increases in education, does this change that? No, that's okay. We'll wait. That's fine. We'll wait.
Yeah, we'll hold on to it. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you. You're going to flat rate, General, Mr. Stewart, and between residential, I'm assuming you mean dorm students and otherwise, and how are you going to go ahead and how do you justify having a dorm person there at the same rate as you have a non-resident person where you've got to provide room and board essentially for a person?
Again, sir, this piece of legislation was actually made at the request of the Youth Academy and the department, so they can speak more authoritatively as to how they calculated this number.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on to that question as well, Senator Olson. Okay, thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, sir.
And why don't we go ahead and bring up the folks from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs representing the Youth Academy. General, you, the floor is yours.
Good morning. Tom Katkus, Commissioner of Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Wasn't originally scheduled to speak this morning, but wanted to take this opportunity to step in and at least provide an overview of what we're trying to do, and that's pretty much stabilization of the funding. We've got adequate funding for what we do with the Youth Academy. This is not lowering the eventual product, the quality students that we get out at the end of the process. So the funding that we have, adequate. The method of how we get that funding, trying to stabilize that, and the specific mechanics of it, I'm going to turn that over to McHugh Pierre.
Okay. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. A couple of questions specifically that were brought up by the members. The retirement issues, as the BSA had increased, as you guys remember, in 2000, 2002, as we started moving from about 3,000 per student, and we started gradually making our way up to 5,000 per student, now it's almost 6,000 per student, we were getting a 7-time multiplier increase in that. So when the legislature found it very appropriate to add $500 to the BSA per student, we got $3,500 extra per student. So you can see that the growth there was unintentional, but at the same time, it allowed us to expand the program. So we were very diligent in using the funds and going from graduating about 100 kids, a little under 100 kids per session to now well over 130, and as many as 161 was our high year or our high session just about 18 months ago. So during that time frame, when we received an additional $1.5 million, I believe it was in FY05, what we did was we took a million of that and moved it to capital, and then we took a half a million and we moved it to pay for our PERS costs for our employees. Because our employees are state traditional state employees, they're not teachers designated for retirement, that is. But they get paid in retirement by PERS. So the BSA increased to cover the TERS liability costs, so we thought it was prudent to use some of that money back 5 years ago to cover some of the retirement costs for our employees as well. And then when we came up with the formula, we worked very closely with Mr. Eddie Jeans from Department of Education, who also worked on the original formula that we're being funded with today. And the intent was not to decrease the amount of money that the Youth Academy receives from the state, because the reason we are such a successful program is because of the money that the state provides. We are the best funded across the country if you look at state dollars compared to federal dollars, and that's why we are one of the best programs across the country. But we understand that we have enough money right now to run the program and run it very, very well. And if we keep this funding rate, as we add students, we also get more money because we have more students coming in. So the rate right now is perfect, and we want to be treated like other schools. And if we need more money, we want to come to you just like other schools come to you and ask for it. But General Kakis and I believe that we are well-funded, and we will meet the requirements of the mission that you give us. And when it comes to residential versus non-residential cadets, clearly the residential cadets drive more intense usage of the facilities, and of course, for the funding stream for food and clothing and other stuff. But that's only for 5 months. 12 months after that, they're non-residential students, and they use the program, and they access the staff and for counseling and what have you. So there is a need for them to be funded. And for simplicity of creating a formula, we decided to treat them equally and match that same budget level we're at today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you for that presentation. And I know we have some questions. Mike, I just have a basic question. I mean, the formula before was pretty simple, just seven times the foundation formula. And now you've come up with a number, 11,990. How did we arrive at that number?
Mr. Chairman, it was just a matter of us saying the intent is not to decrease the funding or increase the funding. The intent is to keep the funding at the same level. And this was a way to do it, to remove the BSA. And we simply, we met those bullet points of requirements. We wanted to be treated as another school, receive funding from the Department of Education, and it was a simple way to reach that goal. And that was the sheer logic behind it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and you're comfortable that number will give you the adequate funding you need for the program?
This is perfect to maintain the program as it is and to allow us to grow comfortably, yes, sir.
Okay, very good, thank you. Senator Huggins, was your question answered?
Yeah, McHugh, thank you. But it brings another one to mind, the threshold to be considered a site. What is the site number for the Youth Academy?
There are different levels on the federal side that we have to maintain.
But for the state BSA, as an example, the neighborhood, if you're a neighborhood school and you get a school of choice, then the number starts to fluctuate. You fall below that. I mean, it becomes a radical departure from your reimbursement. And Mr. Jeans, I think, is here, and he'll tell you all about that here in a minute. But that's an important number that we know as we come into conformity with the BSA piece. So,
Senator Huggins, I have not talked to Mr. Jeans about that, but I'll let him answer that question. We feel very comfortable that we will not dip below 265, 270 graduates ever again. General Kakis has set us on a good slope to go upwards, and we have 186 beds. We're getting ready to expand so we can sleep, 225 cadets, and we're going to slowly grow up until we can graduate, close to 500 cadets per year. And that's the slope that we're on, and this formula allows us to reach that. And so we haven't talked about if we dip below a certain number, because we see our, as we continue to reach out and use the tools that, that you've given us in your committee to access kids who have dropped out of high school, we see our numbers steadily increasing, and we don't ever see a drop-off.
Okay. Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hate to go back over the same thing again. What make you think this $11,990 is going to be stabilizing the funding for your facility? Because the numbers could go down, they could go up, and they could go up drastically since you're trying to improve communication and have all the school district know about the program and provide you information of those dropouts, those that have left school, so that you may contact them. What make you think or why you feel that this $11,990 is a going to be a stabilizing number for you? Your numbers could double. You say you don't have to come back to us. You would have to come back to us. Why would you want it out of the, and why would you want it out of the BSA and just have a flat rate fund? And I don't understand that.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, to answer your first question, we still have a count. So on October 1, if we have 500 kids next cycle, this coming October, then we'll get funded for 500 kids. So it's simply a matter of saying, okay, what does each cadet demand for funding? We are a 24-hour institution. We are high risk. We have some difficult teens, and they need some help. And this is not Mount Edgecombe. We can't just let them go to sleep. We can't let them have free time. They don't get free time. These are the kids who have dropped out, who have identified that they have difficulties, and they want help, and they need help, and they need supervision. We talk a lot about the successes of the program and how we've had, you know, great kids that were dropouts from high school that have gone on to become the Marine Force One mechanics in the White House and do all these great things. But we've also had Joshua Wade as a graduate. And we've had bad kids as well. So we have to mix and match and make sure that we take care of these kids and we give them the safe, dependable environment where they can learn and grow and receive the tools to become contributing members of society. So we see that if we go away from the BSA multiplier, because the BSA is for a public school that operates 8 hours a day. We're a 24-hour unique institution, but we are a school. So Department of Education is going to work with us as a school and give us funding, and we're going to receive a count. So as we start to receive more cadets, we will start to receive more money, and we'll be adequately funded to meet the needs of those kids. And we believe that $11,990 is a sufficient amount to deliver the services per cadet, not only for the 5 months that they're in residence, but also for the 12 months after they graduate the residential program.
Senator Davis.
Continue. Thank you. I don't want you to feel that you have to defend the program itself. It's not the program that I'm concerned about. It's the funding that you're requesting. Because I have a lot of confidence in what you're doing, and I know that's a good program. Don't need to go there. But I think maybe when the finance person comes up from the department, he can more or less answer some of the questions I have. But what I want to know at this time is what the ratio of funding now, federal, state?
Go ahead. Through the chair, Senator Davis, it's about 75-25 state to fed. So we've the program is set up in reversal now. It was 60-40 fed to state at a certain number, and that's something we negotiate with National Guard Bureau. Right now we're at 100 graduates per session, and we're under General Cactus's leadership moving to the next step, which is 144 cadet graduates per session, which will also increase the federal funding that we receive. But we see this, Senator, as the right tool to maintain the state side, because the reason why we're so great is because the state gives us so much money, and we are unique in that. And we don't want to take advantage of this opportunity. We want to accept it. We want to say thank you very much because it has been great, but we want to cap it to be prudent and responsible facilitators of the program.
The 25% that you get from the feds, is that based on the number of students that you have, or is it a flat rate that you get yearly?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, it's based on the number of students we have. So So as we continue to go up, we will get more money, and we'll see that rotation swing more so it's an even 50-50 and maybe more fed to state. But we certainly, we want to get closer to that 50-50 mark, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Davis. Just to follow up on that a little bit, this 11,990 sounds like you're becoming more dependent on federal money. And I guess that concerns me a little bit because that's totally out of our control, the federal money, whereas the state money we have some control, some say over. Are we taking a risk here?
Mr. Chairman, just interacting with National Guard Bureau and watching other programs and the emphasis, having just gone to a recognition event in D.C., and the level of interest in keeping these youth academies going, I don't see this falling off of the plate anytime soon. The state of Alaska, proportionately, among all the other 54 states and territories that are out there, among which a little over 20 have these type of programs, Alaska clearly has the best participation from the state entity. So what we do is set well above the example, and we give them more in line. I don't see it as being a risk, though. But like I said, Alaska is clearly seen among all the participants in this program as very, very supportive from the state level.
Well, very good. I want to welcome Senator Stevens to our committee. Welcome. Yeah, I think, General, I think the concern all the committee members have is this is very contrary to what we're used to. Here we got a program that actually works, and you're asking for less money. You know, it's usually just the other way around. If you have a program that works, we should give it more money and let it flourish, let it grow. But if you're comfortable with this dollar amount and this relationship with the federal money, then I guess I, as the chairman, am as well. I can't speak for the rest of the committee members. Go ahead.
I'd like to address that, Senator Meyer, if I may. For the record, this is McHugh Pierre again. There's an idea that if you hold back funding or if you cap funding, it doesn't allow the program to grow or flourish. I think that's a general concept that's embraced, and I'd like to dispel that because that's not the case here. We can continue to grow and continue to flourish if we cap the funding where it is. We don't need to receive more per student. That's not the issue. We've reached the right amount, and as we get more students, we get more money to address the needs of those students. We want to make sure that we are accountable to you as an oversight body because you are there to make sure that we are executing the funds in a responsible, diligent manner. And when General Kakis and I looked at the budget and we see that if we receive more federal money, we wouldn't necessarily be using the state dollars to the full discretion that you would seem appropriate. If you want us to execute these for education purposes, we have to start becoming creative, say, well, can we buy this, or can we do this, or how do we use this money? Because we don't want you to think that we're not spending the money right. So when you know, working with us and through this exercise, that when we need more money, we truly will need it. And when we don't need more, you understand that we're doing great, and we won't need more money, and we will be open and honest with you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We certainly know that you folks are smart enough to figure out what you do and no need, but like Senator Meyer said, it's fairly unique for people to tell us that they've got enough money, and so that's why we're kind of redundant here in our concerns and want to make sure, you know, obviously it's usually based on, you know, the things that are increasing. Everything goes up, creeps up a little bit at a time over a period of time. So, but like I said, we'll respect your understanding of that situation and know that you've probably thought it through because we've questioned it quite a bit. So in that case, I don't really have any concerns. I expect you've looked at it very thoroughly or else you wouldn't be here so adamantly wanting to make this happen. So I don't have any other questions. I would just want to make that statement.
Mr. Chairman, again, just to really, we have thought through this, and we thought, is this crazy to go in there? And but when you look at it, it's a very austere environment that we keep our students in. It's almost an indestructible environment. These are old Camp Carroll buildings, so our infrastructure is perfect for the type of school that we have. And when you're looking at a 7-time multiplier, you know, cost of food, cost of heating, it doesn't go up 7 times. We've got a nice balance of what the students need. And when we increase more students, you're still heating the same building. You're still, you know, there's a lot of shared costs that don't go up proportionally. So we've reached a nice equilibrium, and that's where we're at right now. What we're saying is we're reasonable people, and this is one of those ones where it would be almost unreasonable to continue to accept the funding above what we're currently getting, because we're very comfortable with it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And again, I appreciate your integrity to come forward to us and say, hey, you know, you're giving us enough money. It's just very unusual to hear that. But I've heard nothing but great things about the program, and I think that's why we're all concerned. We've all heard those, and it's indeed a success story, and thank you for what you're doing there. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, a couple questions. What's the PTR and pupil-teacher ratio?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we have, for every cadet we have about 10 to 12 teachers, but we have much more staff than that because it's not just the class time. So we break our kids down to about 15 to 18 cadets per class. So they have much more one-on-one time. So it's 1 to 15, 1 to 18, but we actually have 90 employees at the Youth Academy. Our heaviest section is the cadre section, which is actually kind of the drill sergeants, if you will. They're the ones who are the 24-hour surveillance. They take them back and forth to class. They're with them all the time, obviously males with males, females with females, and there's two per platoon always through the night. So we have about 90 staff for generally, we started this session with 212 cadets, and that was on April 1st. And we're doing our best to graduate as many as we can. So hopefully we graduate, you know, 180 cadets, which would be fantastic. And that would be, you know, one staff for two cadets.
Okay. In that respect, do the teachers go through the normal state certification process?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, no, they don't. As a private school, we are fortunate to have some teachers who are state certified, but that's not one of the requirements to be a teacher in the private school, which we fall under. So we do work very hard to get state certified teachers, but not all of our teachers are state certified.
Right. And just for the record again, the continuing education for your teachers, do you have a continuing education program?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, not like you would in a traditional school. We, like state employees, we offer our teachers opportunity to take college credits and get reimbursed, and we continue to encourage their future education, and we do different programs during the cycle breaks. We have a month in between each class, so we have a different style of doing that, but we certainly encourage them to take the classes they need to maintain their state certification.
Okay, good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do these students to graduate, do they fall under the exit exam strategy as well?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, they do, as a matter of fact. And so what we have done is the Youth Academy offers 7.5 credits per cycle. So you have to be a dropout to go in, and you can graduate from the state of Alaska and you get a high school diploma if you already have 14 credits and you've already passed your exit exam. You could also receive your GED if you wish. What we're trying to do now, because you have allowed public schools to receive kids who have their GED to go back and get their high school diploma, we've partnered with local high schools in the Anchorage School District and in the Mat-Su School District to offer the exit exam. So if we have a handful of kids who need to take it, they can go there and take it. But also they can get their 7.5 credits and they can go back into high school. So they can take the high school exit exam back at their high school. They can get back into a more stable environment in their life after they've learned the skills at the program and then continue to grow in their community. So that's kind of the three ways that we offer help. We don't personally deliver the high school exit exam because we're a private school, not set up to do that. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Senator Olson. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none. Thank you, General. McHugh. Calls him Mr. McHugh. Eddie Jeans, the Department of Education. Can you join us, please? And of course, by now we all know you, but if you could put your name on the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development.
Okay. Mr. Jeans, it's our understanding that you've been working with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs on this new formula. Any thoughts?
It's a wonderful formula, Mr. Chairman.
Well, how did you arrive at this magical number?
Well, Mr. Chairman, how about if we start with a little history, okay? The current funding formula was adopted in 2002, and as you know, the formula calls for the Military Youth Academy to receive 7 times the base student allocation for resident students, and 6/10 of the base student allocation for non-resident students. So we do have 2 allocations currently set in statute. When this formula was adopted, the base student allocation was $3,940. Okay, we're up to $5,680 today. So in 2002, the Military Youth Academy was receiving approximately $27,000 per child in the residential program. Today, they're receiving $39,700 per child in the residential program. And as Deputy Commissioner Pierre pointed out, many of the increases in the base student allocation were to address liabilities at the school district level for TERS retirement. Their employees are PERS employees. They are not TERS employees. So while the legislature was increasing the base student allocation to help school districts address their retirement obligation, the Military Youth Academy was benefiting from that increase in the base student allocation because the formula is directly tied to the base student allocation. I think what you're hearing from them today is that they've reached a level that they're comfortable with for ongoing operations. And when I looked at the number of students that are being served through the program, both residential and non-residential, I'm not seeing a whole lot of change from year to year, especially in the last 3 to 4 years. So instead of coming back to you and saying, okay, let's put a number in the statute for residential at $39,700 per student and some other dollar amount for the non-resident, we just took a look at the total population and said, how much state aid are they receiving today? They believe that that's an adequate level of funding. Divide it by the total number of students, and that's how we came up with the $11,990. Mr. Chairman, you're the Finance Subcommittee Chair for the Department of Education, and
I'm not the chair, but I'm on that committee.
On that committee. Thank you. You're correct. But I do remember you asking or somebody asking the question about the reduction in the department's budget this year for the Military Youth Academy, $600,000 reduction. And I remember the question being, does the Academy accept that or approve of that? That gets back to the formula. It's formula driven. It was based on an increase in their federal aid. So under the current formula, if they have an increase in federal aid, they receive less state aid. What this does is allow them to continue to receive the same level of state aid on an annual basis, and if they receive more federal aid, that's additional resources that they get to use to expand their program. Deputy Commissioner Pierre and myself have talked about this a number of times. He believes that it's adequate to fund the program for possibly the next 5 years. So if they get to a point where they believe that they need additional state resources, they'll come back to you and we'll take a look at it again at that point in time. But for now, they're comfortable with it. The department's comfortable with it. It simplifies the program, and we haven't seen big changes in the student population that they're serving.
Okay, very good. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for coming out this morning. And there's certainly a dilemma here that we're not used to. Many of us have got finance committee experience, and having somebody come to us and say we want to give you back more money just doesn't seem to go with the flow that we've been dealing with during my whole political career. But as you look at it, why not, instead of changing what's in place already that people are used to, why not just go ahead and reappropriate the surplus back to the general fund and go that route? Because as you look at the history of federal funds over the last year, we realize that, you know, a year and a half ago, there was a major financial meltdown here where our economy certainly showed cracks in it to the degree that is comparable to the Great Depression in the 1930s. And if you're looking at a program that is, or a bill that is being justified because of the adequate federal funding, I see that as a kind of a volatile foundation to be on. And since you're the financial guru, you have a better sense than I do as to something like this.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't see this bill as coming back to you and saying we're getting adequate federal funding. I see it more as the Youth Academy coming back to you and saying, look, we're receiving adequate state funding, and all we're asking you to do is freeze it where it's at. We're not asking to give anything back. We're not asking for more. We're just asking you to freeze it where it's at. And you know, we're perfect. The Department of Education is perfectly comfortable with that.
And when was the, Chairman of Federal Committee, when was the decision made to go and introduce the bill? Well, when did you realize you had a stable foundation?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I think this discussion's been going on for a number of years in this body, and mainly it was tied to the 7x the base student allocation, and that there wasn't a direct relationship to the increases in the foundation program and the increases that the Military Youth Academy was receiving. And I think what's happened is over time, the Military Youth Academy believes that they're funded at an adequate level now. And so they're comfortable coming to you and saying, we don't need to have it tied to the base student allocation anymore. We're at an adequate level, and we're comfortable with staying there for a few years.
Just a comment, and I don't want to make sure it's a question, but you know, it's hard to go ahead and justify in our minds a program that's financially successful and willing to go ahead and say that, you know, enough is enough, and not have the handout like every program that we are always hear about. But more significant is the success rate of 70% graduation amongst students that have essentially left the traditional system and are being brought back up through another route. But as you look at it, with a bill this late in the session, how do you think it's going to make it through?
Well, through the chair, Senator Olson, I mean, that's totally in your hands, not yours personally, but every legislator's hands. You know, quite frankly, I mean, this is a credit to Military and Veterans Affairs and the good work that they've done, and the fact that they feel that they have a good, stable program that can continue to thrive and succeed at this level of state funding. Mm-hmm. So, I think they're doing a great job, and I applaud them for coming forward.
I do, and just so you know, I think the experience, it may be in our hands, but looking at things from a political standpoint, you've been here for over 30 years, and the rest of us are nowhere near that, that are up on this committee, so you've got more political experience than we have, seeing things go from a perspective that we don't have.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I have been around for a while, but I don't get to push the button that says yay or nay, and I've seen legislation move through both bodies relatively quickly.
But also, Senator Olson, there is a House compatible with this bill, and it goes finance next, which you sit on that committee, and so you can push it along, hopefully, if you support it. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your explanation. We'd hate to have people think that we cut by $27,000 the residential students' allotment anyhow, so I appreciate that. But my question would be, do you see this having any impact on any other, such as charter schools, if there was any reduction, particularly below 150 for a charter school, that they would come, or is this specific basically to the academy as far as the language in the statute?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, that's an excellent question. The Military Youth Academy has its own statutory funding scheme. So the bill that's before you today only impacts the Military Youth Academy.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Jeans and his 30 years of wisdom?
I do have a question, Mr. Jeans. I'm looking at him. I'm wondering why I have more gray hair than he does, and all this 30 years of experience.
Well,
I started working for the state in junior high.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jeans.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, then, let's go on then to public testimony, if there is any. Is there anybody online? Okay. Did anybody sign up? Okay. Very good. Then we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Unless, is there anybody in the committee room here before I close public testimony? Seeing none, then public testimony will be closed on Senate Bill 313. Is there any additional questions that the committee members may have while we have our experts here? Okay. Seeing none. And let's see, there's a fiscal note, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
Is this $300,000? Is that right?
I think so.
$300.
$300, yeah.
I couldn't get it exactly.
That's just the first year.
Why don't you come on the record here, Eddie, and explain that?
What, you got a date or something?
I think he's wanted over in house education. This fiscal note shows that actually this year we spent $300 more, but then in the future years it goes down. Or why don't you explain that?
Mr. Chairman, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance. The fiscal note shows an increase of $300 in the current year over what's in the fiscal year 11 budget. That's simply due to the math, and that was as close as I could get it. So, in the future years, we didn't estimate what the changes would be in the future years because that just becomes part of our regular budgetary process. So, when the Academy submits the counts, we'll calculate what their entitlement is. That will go on our future budgets, and it'll be up for your consideration.
Well, Ed, if you could have made this balance out at zero, we could have maybe avoided the Finance Committee. Now that it's going to cost us $300, it has to go to Finance. You're delaying the bill. I'm sure the Finance Committee will work expeditiously on this bill. Okay, is there any other questions on the fiscal note? Seeing none, then I think Co-Chairman Thomas, I think we're ready to go.
Ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 313 from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, Bill moves out of committee. Thank you all for joining us this morning. I think this is going to be our last education committee meeting unless something pops up from the outside. Is this it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'll get you the packets.
I'm sorry?
He'll be coming around with the sign.
Oh, you don't have the book?
No.